welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to Jackie Kennedy. Jackie is a walking activist from Toronto who has a passion for walking and in helping others to make their communities more walkable. The interview took place beside the Serpentine in Hyde Park in May 2008.
I'm Jackie Kennedy and I'm with Green Communities Canada and I'm the Director of Walking Programs.
Can you tell us a little bit quickly about Green Communities Canada?
It's a national non-profit organization. We are a member-based organization, so we have about 30 community-based non-profit organizations across the country that work on initiatives around healthy communities, sustainable communities, environmental protection, everything from water, waste, energy, especially home energy, and of course now walking.
Was the walking element something you brought to it?
I came to them 4 or 5 years ago with the Safe Routes to School program because I needed a national organization because it had grown and grown and grown. So I came to Green Communities and bought Active and Safe Routes to School, which was what we've been doing with them for the last 5 years, but of course I've been working on it for 11 years. And that program has then morphed into other types of walking and active transportation initiatives.
Okay, so tell me something a little bit about how you came to even getting involved with Active and Safe Routes to School, and perhaps explain a little bit about what Active and Safe Routes to School is.
I used to work at IBM. I worked there for about 18, 19 years. And I arranged my day at that time so I could pick up my son from school. So my husband would take the kids to school in the morning, but they went to different schools, and then I would pick him up on my way home. So I would drive because I worked outside of the city. And one day, after I'd done this for probably a whole school year, I was sitting there one day and just realized this was not a very good thing to do. We all lived just a few blocks away, and why were we doing this? So the first thing I did was, on the days when I had time, I would drive home and then walk over the 3 blocks and get my son and walk back. A couple of years later, I left IBM and didn't know what I was going to do, but I had become very interested in environmental stuff, mostly around waste. But I'd had this nagging thing about this whole school trip thing, and there must be something, some way that we can get these parents to stop driving because it was really crazy. So I did a little bit of research and came across a couple of people, Tom Samuels in Canada, who was doing a master's degree on Safe Routes to School at the time. And he introduced me to David Engwich, and I heard about walking school buses and then Sustrans in the UK and the Safe Routes to School work that they had been doing. And thought, well, that sounds interesting. So my colleague and I had founded a little local environmental organization. And so we applied for a grant from the City of Toronto to do 3 schools. I didn't think we'd ever get 3 schools to sign up. That was in 1996. And now it's not only across the province of Ontario, we were over 2,000 schools participating across Canada, around the world. We're all networked together now. And it's been just an amazing journey. I mean, it's just been phenomenal, but it still gets me that there has to be an international program with an international day about walking your children to school. And I think that if this is modern society, that we are out of control. It's ridiculous. That's what I've been doing for the past 11 years.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what a school needs to do to take part in the Active and Safe Routes to School. What's the emphasis on the school? What's the emphasis on the parents? What's the emphasis on the general public or even local authority, the local community council?
Yeah,
or whatever.
We did borrow very heavily from the Sustrans model when I started the program, once I realized that there was a lot of demand for it. Green Communities Canada, that I've been involved with, before I worked for them, I was involved with them because my colleague and I started a green community in North Toronto, and so we were members. And the philosophy behind Green Communities is it's all about what the community wants, and it's very community-based. And it's not a bunch of green people that get together and say, this is a problem in your community and this is how you should fix it. It's bringing the community together and having them decide what are the problems and then helping them, facilitating how to come up with solutions and then moving forward, turning those ideas into action. And I've always been very action-oriented. I'm not the kind of person to sit around and talk about something for a long time. I'm not a process junkie. I think there should be process, but sometimes the process becomes so cumbersome that it actually restricts action. So, you know, let's get some money, let's do a pilot, let's try it, and let's learn by trying. I liked the SusTrans model because I liked the idea of bringing in all the stakeholders in a community. Because really, the reason that kids don't have independent mobility today is just the way our society has gone. Everything from two parents in the workforce, lots of single parents now, crazy working hours, lots of pressure on employees from the workplace, as well as the intense need, almost desire, to own a car. Like, you're not, something wrong with your life if you don't have a vehicle. People who don't have vehicles are considered weird, right? And the emphasis on suburbia, especially in Canada, is huge. Toronto is a very sprawled city, so sometimes there is no choice but to drive. So then people realize that they just have to drive everywhere. So all of these factors led to the fact that it's not really the fault of the parents or the school that the kids are driving. It's really the whole community that needs to get together. So it fit nicely into that community-based approach. So what we did was we started working with school boards, school districts, municipal people, or local authorities, the transportation engineers and planners, the police, public health. Public health is a big player in our program in Ontario because they're mandated to work with schools, and every school has a public health nurse assigned to it in Ontario, so that was fantastic. Physical activity and obesity are a huge issue there today, so it fits nicely within that mandate, and they're also concerned about air quality as well and injury prevention, which again, Safe Routes to School has all of those. So we're bringing those people together with the local politicians, schools, interested schools, and developing a pilot project for that community. So what I do is, through the provincial initiative, is we've created a lot of resources, but our resources are very adaptable. So we work with each community, get them to address what's the issue in your community, how do you want to tackle it, and then take the resources and they adapt them to suit their needs, but they don't have to recreate the wheel every time. And then supporting those communities. So right now in Ontario, we have over 32 community-based Safe Routes to School programs. Some are doing really, really well because they get it. We have all the right people at the table and we have a really fabulous champion in the community. Some are still struggling because the champion burns out, the community still doesn't get it for whatever reason. But what I've noticed over 11 years is that they never give up. And communities that sometimes will kind of fade off for a little bit, suddenly somebody comes along and there's renewed interest. Because I think everybody knows in their heart that kids should be walking to school. And that the excuses that we have around why kids aren't walking to school really aren't good enough. And I think people are, they do know that. So there is quite a strong desire to allow children to have mobility back again, independent mobility, I think is something that everybody believes in.
Okay, one of the questions I asked you, something about, you know, walking and what it meant to you, and you said it defined you. Would you like to try and explore that a little bit for me? I'd like to explore that and find out what you meant by that, and tell us a bit more about where walking has come from for you.
Well, I did grow up in England. We didn't own a car until I was about 13. And so, you know, you grew up, you walked everywhere. That's how we got around. Yeah, there were buses, but we walked. And ever since I was little, I've really enjoyed just going for a walk. You know, whether it's going to a destination or just going for a walk, it's just something that I've always enjoyed. I like being on my own and walking and discovering things. And so falling into this kind of work, promoting walking to school, kind of renewed my interest once again after having kids and going through all of that in walking. And I think that walking is such a great thing. I mean, it is, everybody can do it. It doesn't cost a lot of money. You can actually get quite a long distance with walking. I don't know, I just think walking is great and everybody should do it. And people that say, oh, you know, I'd love to walk, but I just don't have the time. It doesn't take that long to walk. You know, we tend to overestimate how long it takes us to walk somewhere and underestimate how long it would take us to drive. And I actually feel sorry for people and people that I know, neighbors, friends, who are so addicted to their cars and just feel that if they didn't have that car, that their life, they just couldn't do things. They just couldn't get through every day. But I look at how busy I am and how much I achieve every day, not driving. And I have errands to do. I line them up one after the other and off I go. I'm walking. I might take transit for a portion of it, but I try to walk as much as possible. And I get so much done and I feel good at the end of the day because I've also got some exercise. So I think walking is just a natural thing. Our bodies were made to walk and everybody should do it.
Okay, so another thing which I'd like to explore is, because you live in Canada and you come to London once a year, is it approximately?
About once a year for the last 5 or 6 years, yeah.
So tell us, what are the differences between the walking environment in the two cities? What immediately leaps out when you're, I can't wait to get home, or I can't wait to get to London? What are the differences that you notice?
I think the biggest one is that there are just more people on the streets. I like cities. I'm a city person because you can get around on foot easily. When I come to London, the thing that fascinates me is so many people live here. Like, it's more people than live in Canada, live in this city. And yet you can walk around so quickly. You can get places so quickly because the footprint of the city is so small. And the work that's been done over the last few years to actually improve the walking environment for people, I think is just awesome. I love walking in London. But I think what I like most is just that there are so many people everywhere. The streets are just full from early in the morning to late at night. So for me, that's just, there's just so much street life happening. Sometimes in Toronto, when I walk around, what might seem as, oh, it's busy today, and I'm looking at it and thinking, like, there's no people. Like, there's just too many cars and not enough people walking. So I think coming to cities like London, just that people walk, that's what people do. And I just recently heard that an article in the New York Times that the people in New York City are among the healthiest in the world simply because they walk and because they have created a city where they can walk.
Yeah. It's intriguing because I think when you talk to people who live here working in the role of transport, they say actually, you know, walking is declining and we actually don't walk as much in London as maybe in other cities in Europe, which are perhaps better, more compact or more designed for walking. It's interesting you come here. That's the sort of big contrast for you.
Well, one of the questions you asked was what keeps me going. And I think for me, I've spent so many years working on this project and it's changed over those years. It's evolving in Canada. It's evolving to the point where I believe within the next 5 years we'll see some longer-term sustainability of the program where things are getting into place right now. I like to leave a project when I know that it will continue without me. At the moment, it's not that I have this feeling about myself that, oh God, you know, if I leave, it's all going to fall apart, because it probably won't. But it's just not where I want it to be. But it's close. And I really want it to get closer so that I can't stop doing it. But when I look back to where we started and I look at where we are now and what we've achieved, it is quite an accomplishment. I mean, at the time when you're working on it day by day, it's slow, it's one school at a time, it's, you know, 5% increase in families walking, and it's like, it's painfully slow. But when you look at it back over 11 years, it's phenomenal, the growth and the things that we've been able to achieve.
And what's more, it's been sustained too.
The other thing that keeps me going is just seeing that people can change, because I changed, and just seeing that change in people and hiring people who have good skills but didn't really understand anything about sustainable transportation or active transportation, and suddenly they're the biggest man's going, and it's just really, really nice. I just like that.
What would your advice be then to people who may be seeing something similar in their community? I mean, what do you say to people? It's sort of get up and do it, really, is.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people over the years, you know, when they find out what I do, they'll, or when we had the small organization going, which is still going, but I'm just not involved with it, people would call you up and they'd say something like, oh, we need more trees on our street, you know, what can we do? Or, you know, Yonge Street needs more trees, there's no boulevard trees anymore, I think you should fix it. Well, what can you do about it? It's turning it around and saying, well, you know, these are the things that you could do. And pointing people in the right direction. I think people need, sometimes they need to be told what to do, and they need to be told how to do it. They need it to be made a little bit easier for them in order to get engaged, because maybe they don't have that same staying power that some of us have. So if you can encourage them and shift the discussion so that at the end of it they're saying, oh yeah, I could do that, then I think, what my job is. I'm not going to fix everything. You know, you have the power to fix it, and this is how we can help you. So using my experience to help others.
What's your recommended daily dose of walking, and if so, where would you recommend people go walking?
Our daughter lives in Vancouver, and so I try to visit her about every 3 or 4 months. In Vancouver, regardless of the weather, it's lovely. You've been there, you've seen how beautiful it is. And one of my favorite walks is going from the Museum of Anthropology, which is at the top of Southwest Marine Drive, and walking down. You can do a side trip to the nude beach if you're interested. I did that one day, not realizing it was the nude beach. I went, oh! And then came back up that hill. But going down and then following the beach all the way around, like doing the seawall, it's quite spectacular. But the first time I ever did it was raining that day when I left. By the time I got down the bottom of the hill, the sun was shining brightly, it was beautiful, the clouds lifted. You've got forest, and you've got the ocean, and the mountains, and the city, and it's just laid out in front of you, and it's just stunning, you know, and that's just a lovely walk. Rain, wind, sun or shine, it's lovely. And now that Megan lives there, she's very close to Stanley Park, she lives right downtown, so, you know, just leave her apartment in 2 minutes, you're on the seawall, and it's, to me, that's one of the most beautiful walks. And there's always loads and loads of people walking and biking, and it's just fabulous. I think I like walking because I like to have that human contact, but still be on my own.
But you also mentioned that you're a city girl. You much prefer cities.
I like cities.
Do you go on walking holidays, or is a walking holiday is a visit to another city and you walk
we
there?
We tend to go to other cities now. When the kids were younger, we would hike, we would camp and hike, and that was great, and we saw most of Canada that way, and it was fabulous. But that's a different kind of walking. To me, hiking, or rambling, as you call it over here, requires hiking shoes. You have to have special shoes because, you know, in Canada, a lot of the trails are not, you wouldn't survive if you didn't have like the special shoes and the special clothes and all, and the knapsacks and all of that stuff. And you got to carry your stuff with you. It's quite a lot of work. Whereas now my husband and I like to go a couple of times a year over to Europe or somewhere, and we just walk. We just were in Italy. We went to Milan. We had 10 days there. We don't rent cars. We take the local buses, the local trains. We look on the map and we see where we can go about an hour by transit from the city. And we find villages, towns, whatever, other places, and we just walk. And we averaged, I wore a pedometer, and we averaged about 13, 14,000 steps each day, which is a lot of walking. And just get to know the city. I mean, I've had fabulous holidays in, well, Zurich.
I mean, Zurich was fantastic.
Zurich was amazing. The thing about walking in cities is that you just get up in the morning and you just put on your nice comfy shoes, but they can still be nice attractive shoes, and you just go up and walk. And like today, I don't know how far I've walked today, but a bloody long way because my feet are killing me right now.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about the walkability stuff that you're doing in Canada?
Walk 21 Copenhagen was my first Walk 21 conference. I thought it was the best conference I had ever been to. To get 250 people together with the one thing in common was walking, it was amazing. And of course it was in a beautiful location. And I sat there thinking, wow, you know, we've got to do something like this in Canada. I was with my colleague Bernadette, and we looked through the list of delegates and discovered that we were the only two from Canada. And we were absolutely horrified. There was no federal representation, no provincial, no municipal. The big cities weren't there. And there were people from New Zealand, Australia, the United States, 17 people from New Zealand. And we're thinking, well, like, what's wrong with Canada? Walking was just not on the agenda at all. So after I left that conference, I thought, well, we've got to change this. So when I went to Zurich the following year, I met with Jim and Rodney and said, what do I have to do to bring this conference to Canada? And so over the next few months, we negotiated with them. I met with the City of Toronto, got them involved as the co-host, and we were able to bring it to Toronto in 2007, which was a huge accomplishment and more work than I ever would imagine. But I think we did a pretty darn good job. And I think what we tried to do with the conference was raise the profile of walking in Canada as well as in Toronto. And so Jim had had this idea for Australia that didn't work out about doing some walkability stuff in cities as a build up to the conference. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. Maybe we could do that. So I got some funding from our provincial government, and we were going to do three communities. We were going to do Toronto and three other communities, suburban and rural. Suburban stuff in North America is huge. In Canada, it's outside of the Greater Toronto area is so sprawled, so not about walking. And yet, previous Walk 21 conferences I've been to had focused more on cities. And so I'm thinking we've got to take this discussion outside of cities, because cities are going to be much easier to retrofit. And a lot of them are already very walkable. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. So we were going to do a rural community, a suburban community, another urban community plus Toronto, and we ended up with 10 communities. And we brought together a really interesting team of international walkability experts, and we took them to 10 communities in Canada, 9 in Ontario plus Halifax. And it was the most amazing experience to bring in the key decision makers in those communities, the mayor, the councillors, the high-level management. Then we did sessions with all the professionals, the transportation engineers, the planners, the urban landscape people, public health, everybody who worked for the municipality and had something to do with walking or walkability. We brought them together and did training with them. We did walkabouts. We met with members of the public. We had visioning sessions with them to tell us how they felt that they could improve their city. It was so amazing. And we did it in rural communities, suburban and urban, and it was hugely successful. And those communities continue to do stuff. And so that really inspired us and meant that we could get those communities to sign the International Charter for Walking, get them to come to the conference and tell other cities and suburban areas and rural areas what they've done to make walking and walkability better. So that really opened up my eyes. I wouldn't consider myself an expert, because I couldn't have gone into those communities and given that same kind of expertise as the team that we put together. But being able to have facilitated that and make it happen was pretty rewarding, I must say. And then having the conference and all the other things that we did around the conference, we did that world record walk. It was great.
Well, I mean, the other aspect that I liked about the conference, of course, was that you had art involved in it. So you had the exhibition at the Design Exchange. You seemed to be able to encourage other venues to hold things that linked to walking, so that included sort of art at the Gladstone Hotel. There was the evening at the Bloor Cinema. Can you sort of tell me how easy that was to organise those sorts of things, or at least to entice those people to be involved?
The City of Toronto does a really good job with public consultation. They have public consultation on everything. Sometimes it gets a little out of hand. So we put together an advisory committee made up of members of the community. So pretty much they were activists who had an interest in walking and walkability. And we empowered them, and the city gave them some funding to take conference outside of just the delegates and have more people in the city know that was going on. And I must say it was hugely successful, because we have never ever seen so much in the newspaper and the media about walking, and it's continued. And I think that conference and all that work that we did over that year and a half has shifted the thinking in Canada, definitely. Now we've got more communities wanting to do these sort of roadshow kind of things. We've started something called Canada Walks, and we're hoping to get that going over the next 6 months. We're teaming up with other organizations that have a focus on walking and trying to network with them and bring it all together under one umbrella. Not that we want to be seen as the only place for walking and walkability, but trying to make it easier for people to create that network. And so that if you are a community and you want to do something around walking and walkability, you can come to us and we can help you and network you with the right people. There's been a huge shift over the last 2 years, and I think certainly a lot of it has had to do with all this work that we've been doing.
Can you give us a sort of like an indication of what initiatives have been, or what interventions have been implemented in Toronto to promote walking?
One of the key things that Toronto did leading up to the conference was a supposed to be a pedestrian master plan, but then they changed it and called it a walking strategy. And that document is now being finalized. A lot of consultation went into it, and including the conference. It's a really comprehensive document. It really does lay out what needs to happen to make Toronto a much more walkable city. And now they're starting to put things in place to make that happen. I've heard that they're thinking about creating this Office of the Public Realm, which will take into consideration not just walking. I mean, walking isn't just about building sidewalks. You know, you've got to have good destinations to walk to. You've got to have something to do when you get there. It's got to be pleasant. So there's a lot of effort now being put into this through this walking strategy. So I think over the next couple of years, as long as it doesn't get too bogged down in the bureaucracy, we will start to see some changes. Also in Toronto, they have identified 13 priority neighborhoods. And these are neighborhoods that have a lot of issues, a lot of social issues, different cultures. And so what they're trying to do with the walking strategy is focus on those 13 neighborhoods to make the public space in those neighborhoods much better, rather than focusing just on the downtown, which is already really walkable.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from Jackie Kennedy. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net. Talking Walking is written, recorded, and produced by Andrew Stuck at Rethinking Cities Limited. Our logo artwork was created by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and produced by Simon Sanders.